Okay, we ready?
Just about.
Let's go.
Okay, so this is the Bon Jovi Tour podcast. I've got Matt O'Rion, who some of us might remember from the 2015 tour with Bon Jovi. Obviously, it was a short little tour. I think it was just in Asia in 2015. It was kind of a surprise tour for all of us, really, as the band hadn't really released anything apart from a throwaway album, as they called it. Obviously, the whole Richie thing and Phil X being an official member or not, and then obviously Bobby Bandiera was no longer to be seen. So I'm absolutely delighted to have Matt on. As I always say, I always let the guests try and introduce themselves, talk a little bit about themselves, a little bit more about everything else other than Bon Jovi, and then I'll do the Bon Jovi part. So Matt, go ahead. What do you want to speak about? So just introduce yourself.
Sure, yeah. My name is Matt O'Ree, and I'm a New Jersey-based guitar player. And I was very fortunate to get the audition and get the gig to tour and perform with Bon Jovi in Southeast Asia, September 2015. And it was, we'll get into the details, I'm sure, of course, but it was really the time of my life, and it was such an honor to be a part of that whole organization, and it really helped my own band, the Matt O'Ree Band, you know, launch our material into a new level of performance and writing and touring and popularity too as well. So back in 2006, I won a guitar player contest through Guitar Center called King of the Blues. It was the first time they ever had it, the first year. And I was again fortunate enough to win the whole thing, and so I was crowned, I guess, King of the Blues. Even though we all know there's only one King of the Blues, and that's BB King. Mm-hmm. And but BB was the actual the headliner for the event that night. So after our competition, it was BB King's show. So I got a chance to hang and chat with him for a few minutes, and John Mayer was there. It was a really cool. It was really like the first time I ever won anything or got awarded anything of that level. That was put me in Guitar World magazine, and you know, obviously got me a lot of endorsements, Gibson guitars, and it was something so substantial, you know, to finally win that in 2006, and that kind of again springboarded my career, and then you know, luckily, I did the Bon Jovi tour, you know, years later.
So we'll go back to that 2006 then, and you just said there that it kind of kickstarted your career. How did that help? What did it do from then?
It, you know, again, the publicity that I gained from that, of course, the, you know, having, you know, something on your resume, a musician's resume being, you know, their biography, you know, being able to tell club owners, hey, you know, I just did something so substantial and I beat 4,000 guitar players and won this whole contest, and I won a car and won all these guitars through Gibson and an endorsement with Gibson in, you know, and then being in Guitar World magazine. It really helped start my touring career, you know, at a much better level. So, you know, nowadays with obviously the decline massively of record sales, the only thing that's really left for original artists is to tour and perform. So that Guitar Center thing really put me on the right track. I started I changed my business from what was a sole proprietorship to a LLC, and got a big, better van and got a better trailer, and we started touring, you know, touring the United States. And that also helped lead to I worked with the Blues Brothers for a little while with their manager, and we did some shows with them overseas as well, over by you guys. So it was really that Guitar Center thing really is what helped springboard just getting my name out there, promoting my records at the time that I had out, and really pushing, you know, in the right direction, which was touring. And, you know, back then people were still buying records. Mm. So now it's like, wow, I could see the importance of just the path that I've been on. And here we are back to touring as much as we possibly can.
So before 2006, before you won the contest, how was your career going at that point?
That was pretty much before that was growing it locally here and Asbury Park making a big comeback as it did, thank God. Trying, you know, to keep working, you know, locally and keep, you know, opening for acts that come through to try to make more connections and more friends and, of course, more fans. And that was everything pretty much prior to 2006.
Yeah. So before you mentioned how, like, 2015, the tour of Bon Jovi kind of stepped it up a little bit as well. So how's that helped? How did that tour help you?
I mean, locally, it was like the... It actually won, there's an awards ceremony every year called the Asbury Park Music Awards. And Asbury Park now obviously being famous around the world for not only Bon Jovi, but obviously Bruce Springsteen and the Smithereens. And, you know, there's been a handful of bands that, you know, to come out of New Jersey, including that being recognized and associated with Asbury Park. So Asbury Park, I forget what year they're on it now. I think it's the 15th or 16th year of the Asbury Park Music Awards. So getting the Bon Jovi gig for that tour, I wound up winning a Asbury Park Music Awards for the best thing to happen in 2015.
Oh, wow.
Which was, yeah. So locally it drastically changed, you know, everything really, even to the point where it's just weird how, you know, even my friends that are fans for a long time, you know, started treating me differently. And I'm like, guys, I'm still the same person, man. Like nothing's changed, but it was just such a trip to see. And, you know, and I was only there for, you know, a one short tour. I can't imagine, you know, I can imagine a little bit of what it's been like to be John for 30 years,
yeah.
You know, and it's just amazing what that, you know, that success level, that status level, the popularity level does to people's, you know, psychotic, I guess, of thinking that, you know, who you are, you know. It's just, it was pretty neat to, it was a whirlwind, you know, locally at home. The other great part is that now getting gigs in other states where before that was more difficult because they don't know if anybody's going to show up to see you play.
Yeah.
And of course, numbers equate to liquor sales, which equates to ticket sales and all that stuff. So all that stuff tied into whether, you know, a venue in Iowa is going to give somebody from New Jersey a gig, mm-hmm. You know, but now at least with that on the resume, it's changed a ton for us. And my wife and I wind up becoming more of a duo in the band, of co-singing in the band. So now we were actually touring right up until this whole COVID-19 thing really, you know, here at least in the States,
yeah.
Came to a screeching halt and they shut everything down. We just finished our tour down in Daytona, Florida, the Sunday of Bike Week, which is the last week of that big event for motorcycle riders. We played the last Sunday and then Monday everything got shut down. So we
wow.
Drove home on Monday. So it's just crazy what's going on here. But as soon as this stuff is over, we're going to be right back to touring and bigger and better than ever, we hope.
That's good. That's good to hear. So one of the key words that I picked up on before was you said that you had to audition for Bon Jovi.
I did, yes.
Wow. Like, to be honest, I didn't know that. Can you talk us through the process of that?
Sure. I still perform at this place in Red Bank, New Jersey. Red Bank also has its little bit of fame with Jay and Silent Bob and, you know, Clerks, the movie, and, you know, Kevin Smith that produced all those movies. He's pretty much from a town called Leonardo, which is right next to Red Bank. Anyway, there's a small pub in Red Bank called Jamian's, and I've been performing there for, heck, it's got to be 15 years now, maybe 12 years, and I had the first Friday of every month. I still have that standing date there. And Bandiera played there a bunch too. And I jammed there with Phil X when Phil X was in town. It's just a really cool pub, and there's always a great band playing. Anyway, long story short, I was playing there one night, and a friend of mine who used to take guitar lessons, Brad, walked in while we're playing, and it sparked a memory. I'm like, wow, I used to teach that guy. That's Brad. And right behind Brad was David Bryan. And I'm like, oh, wow, that's David from Bon Jovi. And, you know, he has such a, you know, unmistakable image, you know, it's the keyboard player Bon Jovi. So anyway, so I took a break and I went over to go see Brad and gave him a big hug. And I was like, wow, it's had to be 5 years since I had seen Brad. And Brad's like, you know, I want you to meet my friend, you know, David. You know, we were having dinner across the street at this place called Teak, which is like an Asian fusion restaurant. And I wanted David to come over to hear you because I thought he would really like you. And I was like, oh, cool. So wound up chatting with David. And I said, hey, Dave, you know, if you want to come up and play a tune, man, you're more than welcome. And he's like, yeah, I'll come up and do something. And it was, you know, I've told this story numerous times. It was that first. It's amazing what music can do. It can bring two complete strangers together. Yeah. And yet now you feel like you both known each other for 20 years. And it literally was from the first note we played together. I felt like I've known him forever. And I didn't, obviously. So David and I, you know, hit it off as friends and wound up becoming friends with his wife, Lexi. And then they started hiring my band to do parties at their house, which was so cool to see that, you know. And just we became better friends and better friends. Anyway, David wound up using us for his backup band for a fundraiser he had over in Milan. I guess this has got to be 2013 or something like that. And then, again, friendship just grew and grew and grew. So eventually, John got to the point where I guess he was looking for a guitar player, because Bandiera couldn't do this tour for whatever reasons. So he had tried out some guitar players. David let me know, hey, you know, John might be somebody. Are you interested in doing something like that? And me being a Hendrix, Stevie Ray Vaughan, you know, Zeppelin guy, which is kind of what my band, if I could sum it up, ZZ Top and, you know, Allman Brothers. And he's like, you know, would you be, you know, musically interested in something like that? And I'm like, well, of course I would be. who would ever say no to the opportunity, even just to meet John and just chat with him? So yeah. Even, you know, I thought in my own head, like, well, hey, this is cool. I'm going to get a chance to meet John, which I've never met him, and get a chance to chat with him. And, you know, if he uses me, great. If he doesn't use me, hey, it's still cool that he knows who I am, you know? So, you know, me being my normal, humble self, that's how I, you know, thought of it. So anyway, a few days went by, and the next thing I know, I got a call saying, hey, you know, we're good to go. You know, I'll bring you over to John's. You know, this is Dave talking. So we got together that morning and went over to John's house, and it was so surreal, you know, to knock on the door and, you know, John answers the door and, you know, bring the and it was, you know, I thought for sure he had somebody answering the door for him or something. But it was just so cool to finally meet John. And he was just so nice and humble. And, you know, it's just – and so he goes – I think I had two guitars in my hand and a little practice amp and some cables. And he looks at me trying to juggle all this stuff, you know, carrying it. And he starts laughing. He goes, put all that stuff back in your car. Just bring the acoustic. He goes, I watched a bunch of videos of you. I already know you're better than everybody else. We're cool, man. It's all good.
Wow.
And I was like, wow, that's, you know, very, very nice of you to say that. So anyway, so we walked in with an acoustic and we just started just rapping as friends. And he was like, you know, I can't believe we haven't met before. And I'm like, yeah, we walked a lot of the same paths and have a lot of the same friends. And we just never crossed paths, you know. So anyway, just wound up chatting. We wound up playing some songs together on the acoustic guitar, and that was pretty much it. And it was like, he's like, all right, man, I'll let you know what we're gonna do, you know, and I'll give you a buzz, you know, when we decide. So about three or four days went by, maybe five, and I was sitting on my doorstep, and my phone rings, and it was John, and he's like. I think the words he said, he goes, you still want to go on tour? And I said, man, my bags are always packed. And And he's like, well, welcome aboard. You know, I'll send you all the info and rehearsals are, you know, these dates, and let's go do it. He's like, perfect, man. Happy to be a part. So it was very stressful on my part to learn all the material, and then we got to rehearsal, and you know, it's just like, I can't believe I'm standing next to the guy, you know, and there's the white microphone stand, like the things I remember, you know, being in high school, you know, and I grew up in a town called Homedale, which is where I still live. And you know, in the 80s, which is when I was in high school, the later 80s, you couldn't get away from Bon Jovi music if you wanted to. Like, it was everywhere. You know, he was huge. He was top of the world. And I just remember that white microphone stand as a kid. And here I am standing in his studio with the other guys. And we're, wow, all right, let's try this song. And there's that white microphone stand. It was something that always stood out to me. One thing I always wanted to tell John this, and I haven't had the chance to. And I did talk to him recently, but it just hasn't come up in conversation. But 1989, my friend brings me to a Bon Jovi concert. It wasn't Madison Square Garden. It was at the time it was called the Brendan Byrne Arena, which is in the Meadowlands. So, you know, whatever, a 17-year-old kid, and John's up there playing, and you know, and the show was fantastic. And I'll never forget John saying on the microphone, he said, you know, if you follow your passion and follow your dreams,
yeah,
you can end up where I did. I did it. I never gave up. And here we are. And thank you for being a part of the show. And it was just, it was, I think he had said more than that, what I just paraphrased, but I'll never forget what he, you know, him saying that. And I took that message to heart. And I never thought that here I am, be standing next to him, you know, the guy who inspired me, one of the guys inspired me to never give up, to keep going. And it was just a dream come true, you know.
Oh, that's unbelievable, isn't it?
It was incredible. And, you know, there was moments along the tour, and I'm like, wow, I can't believe that just happened. And one of them is we were in the airport in Korea, and obviously fans find out where we were flying into and where we were staying at, and we're walking through the airport, and there's a line of people waiting to see John, and some of them are holding vinyl records, and me being a big vinyl record fan, I still listen to them all the time. There's a fan standing there with Slippery When Wet vinyl record, and everybody's signing it. John signs it, and Hubie signs it, and you know, Phil signs it, and David signs it, and Tico signs it, and I was like, okay, I'll jump on the bandwagon here.
Why not?
And I signed it, and it was such the coolest moment. That was like, wow, I never thought, but it was all the way back to that 1989 show.
Yeah.
And his inspirational words that still ring true with me, and I'll always carry that with me, and of course, never give up, you know?
So, you know, when you've done the audition, how confident was you that you were going to get the part to play with Bon Jovi? Did you come away thinking, yeah, I've got that? Or the part you think, no, I haven't got this?
It was a great question. Since it was a very low key, like, hey, let's just, you know, play some songs together, you know, I was hoping that he'd give me the chance, because I am, again, I'm much like him, where I would never give up, and I'm always trying to be the best me I could possibly be. And I know tomorrow I'll be that much better of a me, you know? So, and I know John feels the same way and has the same work ethic, which is why I was so excited to work with him. At that moment, I honestly didn't know. I was just like, okay, well, let's see what happens. Cause at that time too, my band was very popular in the area, and we were doing, you know, tours on our own. Obviously nothing compared to what a Bon Jovi tour level is, but in the back of my mind, I'm like, well, I'm gonna keep doing what I'm doing, which is what I always been doing. So, you know, if John needs me, you know,
yeah,
I'll definitely go. If he doesn't need me, I'm gonna keep doing what I do. So that was kind of the mentality. I was trying to keep it rooted, like, in reality, like, well, hey, he could need me. And if he doesn't need me, I have to keep working anyway.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
and that's kind of what I was thinking. And I was shocked when I got the call. I was like, "Holy crap, this is for real!"
When you got the call, obviously, as we know, the leg of the tour was quite short. As I said, there was no album with the tour or anything. He kind of done a throwaway album. So, did you think you were going to carry on? Did John say you were going to do just this leg of the tour and then carry on, or was the plan just for the one leg?
I mean, as far as I was, you know, I just figured I was hired for whatever period of time they need me for. Of course, I was hoping that I might stay and do more work with those guys. But it, you know, for me, it wound up just being that one tour that they needed me for. So, you know, now John has John Shanks playing with him, which has been his producer for a long time. And I just ran into John out at the NAMM convention in California in January. And you know, he's such a great guy to chat with, man. He's, you know, just a wealth of knowledge and great guitar player, great musician, great producer. So, you know, I wasn't surprised when John was using his producer, you know, because that's, you know, a lot more familiarity. I'm sure John Shanks knows even more of the catalog than I knew at the time. So, you know, I guess that's just the way it went. You know, I was really hoping I'd stay, you know, but, you know, watching, you know, or it was my first real experience with being a hired gun, because I've only ever done my own material, my own band.
Yeah.
But, you know, so being a hired gun, that's the upside and the downside. The downside is that tomorrow may not happen and you might not be there. So it was it was a tough thing to go through, because that was my first real experience, especially at that level.
Yeah.
to not, you know, go do the next tour. But unfortunately, that for me, that's just the way it went. But yeah, you know, wish those guys all the best, of course.
Well, what a lot of Bon Jovi fans noticed in 2015, obviously it was kind of Phil X's first tour with the band, really, because he kind of got drafted in 2011 and 2013. So this leg of the tour was the first time he'd started a brand new tour with Bon Jovi. And what Bon Jovi fans noticed was how comfortable he felt, or it looked, around you. I felt it brought a different side, a more relaxed side of Phil X out. I don't know what your interpretation of that is. I don't know if Phil X ever mentioned that, but that's, watching the videos, we kind of thought Phil X looks a lot more comfortable around you than he did in any of the other shows in 2011 and 2013.
Sure. I know when they rushed Phil in to, you know, to bail them out, you know, after the Richie and John parted ways, you know, I can't imagine what it was like for Phil, you know, to be in that hot seat, you know. Oh my God, you know. And of course, you know, and from a fan's perspective, you know, they love Richie, and why wouldn't they? I mean, Richie is that part, that thing that's made that band, you know, like it's the other part of the puzzle, you know. So, you know, even I know it was a tough job for Phil to walk in as a hired gun, but I'm so happy to see that Phil's now, you know, like a permanent member, right? I would say, you know, I don't know that officially, but it seems like he is. He's in the pictures now.
Yeah, he's being made. He's being made an official member now. Like, that got confirmed in like 2016. So he is, by the looks of it, he is a confirmed member of the band now.
Which is great. And, you know, Phil is such a great musician, not only great guitar player, but great musician. I really enjoyed playing next to him, and I learned a ton, watching him and listening to him. So I learned a ton watching John command an audience. It was like, you know, talk about an education, you know. And when I got back to work with my guys, it was like my whole life had changed, you know, in that 1 month, you know, not only obviously in popularity around here, but it was also the learning curve and experience that I just went through. It's like, I just went to master class, you know, and it was another adjustment for me to get back into my own driver's seat, you know, but now I'm a better driver. So it was such a learning thing for me. And, you know, I every time I see Phil, I saw Phil out at NAMM as well, and you know, he and I just hit it off as friends and comrades, you know, and John too. So it was, you know, I thought that what you guys are talking about as far as what it looked like on stage, that was honest. That was not, it was not acting or scripting or nothing like that. And that's what I was so thrilled about, that John felt comfortable with me on stage. You know, after the first show, I know John was probably really nervous about it or concerned, because he's going into battle with an unproven weapon, essentially, right? So yeah. After the first show went off, I John was so happy he came over and gave me a huge hug, you know, right before we did the bow at the end of the show. And I was like, cool, all right, so, you know, I guess everything's okay, you know. But, you know, it was very honest on stage, all our banter, you know, of how we played off each other.
Yeah. So around that time, I think the band were playing about 20 to 22 songs, which is a lot of new songs for you to learn. So how long did that take?
It was actually 44 for me. Wow. So we wound up rehearsing a lot more material, and then I don't know if we ran out of time or, you know, I felt like I was kind of like, crap, I got to really step this up because all these guys know this stuff, you know, and I the parts I was kind of struggling with, some of them just because of the mix of the material that they had originally given me, I couldn't really tell what Bobby was playing. He wasn't very loud in the mix of the material. So they wound up giving me a whole new tracks to listen to, where I was like, oh, well, they remixed it so I could hear what Bobby was doing. Oh, wow. Which made a huge difference. But I've kind of felt like I should have asked for that from the get-go. But again, I didn't quite know that that was even an option. So anyway, so I learned a lot more than the 22, but we only wind up playing the 22 on a nightly basis. So I don't know if John was maybe nervous that we wouldn't get through it, or, you know, we didn't have that much time at rehearsal. So he just stuck to things that he was comfortable with, which made it a little bit easier for me to get comfortable with his 22 songs. And yeah, like you said, I never actually sat down and learned any Bon Jovi stuff. If it was Hendrix material, I would have nailed it, no problem.
Yeah.
So it's just, you know, it being that being more of my passion. But you know, anyway.
So what I've always been interested in is how and who comes up with the set list. I mean, we've seen documentaries and John sat there writing it out, but is it always John who writes the set list out and then just goes and tell you guys, right, this is what we're playing, or do you all get into a room and discuss it?
No, at least, you know, when I was there, we would get the set list about 20 minutes before showtime.
Wow.
And then it was like, and then you're hoping that, like, I hope not. What's different from last night's show? You know, because I know he's going to mix it up.
Yeah.
Which why wouldn't he want to mix it up? I mean, any artist would want to do that. So, and then, you know, I would scan the set list, you know, and in my mind, mental notes. Okay, don't forget this and that and this and that, and oh, this song has a third and a fourth, and okay, you know, it was like kind of like cramming for the biggest test of your life every night. And, you know, and then after we would finish the show, there'd be the encore, and then John would decide what songs he wants to do. So it would be the same thing, you know, like the crew would be like, you know, blah, 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 this, that, and that. Here we go. You know, it's kind of like, it's like, you know, I can imagine, like, you know, the Navy SEALs jumping out of a, you know, a halo jump out of a plane. That's kind of what it felt like.
So what I've always, well, certainly since 2013, John kind of mentioned how obviously 2013 up until I'd say about 2017 was quite a difficult time, obviously with Richie leaving and so on. And one thing that he mentioned in a couple of songs was how his vocals weren't the same. He mentioned in one song on the latest album we got how his voice is shot and, you know, he's going grey and everything like that. Did he ever mention his vocal struggles during the rehearsal time for you guys? Obviously songs are very high for Bon Jovi. And obviously he's kind of said himself that, you know, his voice is shot these days, and he's quite open about it, which is good. But how did he react? Sure. How did he see him in, like, the rehearsal studios or after the show about his vocals?
I mean, it's, you know, it's a natural thing, as obviously we get older, that you can't do what you once used to be able to do. You know, even Robert Plant's been, you know, subject to that, and that was all the way back in 70. You know, three, you know, when his voice started changing, you know, due to overuse. So, I mean, John, I mean, he never really said much. I mean, we were just always, you know, all of us were just trying to perform the song and back him up as much as we could vocally, you know, from night to night. So that's, you know, I was more concerned about me, you know, doing the right part for him, you know, than so much, you know, if he was struggling or not on his end. I was more concerned about me giving him the best of me that I could, you know. So that's really all I experienced, you know.
So what was your emotion when you were playing with the band then? Was the first show nerves, and then did it go to confidence as the shows grew, like, went on, or was you constantly a bit of both?
That first show was just like, oh my God, because I didn't really know what to expect. I mean, of course I'd been on many stages, but nothing to that degree.
Yeah.
And it was like, trying to get my head together, like, oh my God, don't forget this, don't forget that. You know, again, the same thing about the material, because it's not like I've been playing the material for 10 years, you know, where it's, you know, I like to get comfortable, so comfortable with the songs that I'm not thinking about them anymore.
Yeah.
So I can play them even better that way, because I'm not thinking about structure. I'm not thinking about chord changes or bridges or verses. I'm just thinking about, let me make this note sound even better. So, you know, I wasn't even nearly close to that the first show. So, you know, walking out on stage was like, you know, I really didn't know what to expect. I've never felt an audience of 55,000 people before. So yeah, the absolute nerves were just, mm-hmm. and the adrenaline was just through the roof. I mean, I couldn't contain myself, you know? And so, you know, but as the tour went along, I did start to get a little bit more comfortable with it, but it was, you know, there was multiple moments every show that I'm looking around the audience, and I just wish that my friends and my bandmates back home could see what I was seeing, because it was everything that every musician ever dreams about, you know.
Well, one thing that I was thinking of the other day when we kind of said that you'd come onto the podcast was, obviously, the band a couple of years later got inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And they kind of brought everyone who'd played with the band. Richie Kane back, Alec John Such was back, and then obviously Phil and John Shanks were on stage as well. Did any part of you think you may have got an invite to that? Because obviously John Shanks had only been doing, this was his first tour with the band as well while he got inducted. Did any part of you think, you know, you may have got a phone call or anything like that?
I don't think I ever really thought that they'd call me for that. But of course, I was like, I'm sure in the back of my head, I was like, oh man, I wish I was there with the guys, you know? I mean, obviously such an honor for him. And finally to get into that thing, you know, it was such a cool thing, you know, I'm so proud of those guys. But me being only there for a short period, you know, I wasn't really quite expecting that, no.
Yeah. So you mentioned about the blues earlier, and again, kind of when you were on tour with the band, a lot of fans mentioned how you had that blues element. I don't really know much about guitars, but one thing I did notice is you had that blues sound. And when Richie left, obviously he was a bit of the only way I could describe him is like a bluesy player. He kind of had that type of sound. Did you intend to try and not keep the same sound, but with you being a blues type of player, did you want to bring that sound into the band? Or back into the band, should I say.
Because, you know, I definitely agree that Richie, you know, definitely has a blues background. There's no doubt about it. I wasn't really quite thinking, like, I definitely was not thinking I'm trying to replace anybody. You know, yeah. I was just really trying to do what Bobby was doing, you know, previous to that. But, you know, for me being, you know, long time studied guitar player and guitar teacher, I can definitely cop other styles, but you still are who you are. So I was just hoping that what I was playing, you know, really fit in with their music. And there's one video, I guess, of that Keep the Faith video that's been out for a while. I thought my solo in it was, I was pretty happy with it. And it's funny watching some of those videos, because me on stage with in-ear monitors in and all my nerves and everything else too, I never heard the audience applaud after any of my solos, because I, especially where I was standing, there was no way I could hear that, you know.
Yeah.
So watching back on the video, you know, 6 months, 8 months, a year later, it was like, wow, I didn't realize that people liked liked what I was doing there.
We did.
Because I never heard it. So, you know, but it was very humbling to see that video and you know, I'm just gracious that the Bon Jovi fans, you know, accepted me, you know.
Describe the feeling when you watch yourself playing with the band now. So if you was to go onto YouTube and type the Keep the Faith video in now, how would you feel? Would it be totally different to how it was in, say, 2015, 2016, rewatching it?
No, actually, because I recently, somebody put together a montage, and I think there's a few of them out there, and it was, you know, comparing, you know, me to Bobby to you know, and it's like, you can't compare that. You can't compare music. Like, music is an interpretation, you know? So, I think all the guitar players that have been in Bon Jovi, they're all excellent. So, I mean, I was kind of flattered that people at least thought of me and, you know, to put that video together, but, you know, to be like, you know, one versus the other, it's kind of silly, you know? Anyway, but watching that video, and I still, my adrenaline still goes through the roof. So that's because it's like, you know, now, I mean, it's been a while, obviously, since I was there, 5 years, obviously. So you kind of forget about some of the stuff. And then I go back to that video and I'm like, wow, I can't believe I actually did that, you know. I can't believe I got the opportunity to do it. And I'm happy with how I played. I think that was good, you know. So, and you know, us musicians, we're always our own worst critic. So if I'm actually pleased with something I did, it's like, it's kind of rare.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned how, because what I thought was, I thought you were friends with Dave O'Brien for a long, long time, I'll be honest. As you said, it was fairly recent up until when you got into the band. I don't know if that was just a rumor that I seen, you know, that he not helped, but he kind of guided you into the, well, now that I know it's the audition, he kind of helped you get that. But
sure.
How often do you speak to any of the members of the band? Do you speak to John or David at all still?
I speak to David probably every week at least. I just talked to him a couple of days ago because he's got, you know, COVID-19. He's got the coronavirus, and he's, you know, he's getting better. And he was saying, you know, how awful it really is, you know, but it affects people differently. Like his wife has it, but she has no symptoms. So, you know, it's just crazy, you know, how it's just targeting certain types of people, I guess. I don't know, but hopefully it's going to diminish and be over soon. But, anyways, I talk to David and I see him pretty regularly. He's been very busy with his musicals, so I haven't seen him as much as I usually do, at least lately. And of course, everybody being quarantined and him having it, I'm not going to see him for a while.
Yeah, yeah.
To stay away. But I still chat with Phil. I still text him. I saw Hugh, I guess, last year, and of course, you know, John Shanks over at the NAMM convention, and I talked to John. When was the last time I saw him? My wife and I were doing this acoustic gig not far from his house, and they were all rehearsing, and they all came over to hang with us for a bit and have something to eat.
That's good.
So, yeah, it was great. So and it's always great to see John, man. He walked in, you know, he's like, you know, get over here, you know, gave me this, you know, huge hug, and you know, he and I were just chatting, and we were just chatting about what I've been up to, you know, obviously since that, you know, so it was you know, it's just nice to catch up with him, and you know, any sort of advice I can get from him obviously is much appreciated.
Yeah. So what's the plan with, obviously, when this coronavirus hopefully, you know, starts to fade away, what's the plan for you and your band then?
I mean, we're going to go straight back on the road. So I mean, we still have tour dates potentially pending for May into June, July, and August, but we don't know how long this is going to last for. And we already lost a ton of work, which is just awful. But, you know, it's all musicians have. It's not just us. So, you know, in the meantime, Aaron and I have been doing what we call a couch concert. We're actually doing one tonight on our, live on our YouTube channel, MOB on TV, and also live on our Facebook channel. So just, continue to keep connecting with our fans and friends out there. And we did one last week and it was a really great success. So we're going to keep doing them every Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time until this is over. So hopefully we can still keep some of those dates on the books, so when it's over, we can get right back to touring. But that's at least our plan. The real difficult thing for musicians right now is since dates are being obviously canceled or on hold, is if all of a sudden, I don't know if there's going to be one day where it's like, okay, cool, everybody go back to work. I think it's going to taper off over time. So, it's going to take a while for people to come back out and start seeing the play, which, hopefully that tapering is not going to be too long. But at least for us, we're going to go right back to touring as quick as we can.
So another thing, just to go back to Bon Jovi, you mentioned about seeing them in 1989. What was the, like, was you kind of mentioned how they were all around, you couldn't, hide away from them. They were getting played everywhere. But before that show, how much of a fan was you? Was you a fan at all? Did you like the music? What was your impression after? Sure.
That was such a great show. Probably one of the best I had seen, really, to date. I mean, John had the big catwalk at that point, and then he had that flying suit that he'd come out over the audience. I mean, it was an absolute, stellar show from start to finish, and again, being growing up at that time, I was, when I was in high school, I think I was a senior, and John's brother was a freshman. So we spent some time in high school together too. And when he actually came to pick me up for the tour, and I hadn't seen him since 1990, I guess. And it was so great to reconnect with his brother, Matt. So, yeah. So there was also, some kind of connection, through family, through friends too, back then as well. But, seeing that show, it definitely was an eye opener. Like, wow, this show is amazing. That Hendrix, Clapton, ZZ Top fan, that was always my drive, because for some reason I just connected with that to the point where I feel like I can do that. So, where John was at and his music and his career was like, wow, I don't know if I'm, most musicians don't think they're good enough to do certain things, So I just kept pursuing that path and my passion of the Hendrix, Stevie Ray Vaughan, ZZ Top thing.
Yeah. Just before we wrap up, I've got a couple of questions from fans. When I mentioned that you were on,
sure.
I got quite a lot of messages. So am I okay awesome. To just read a couple?
Yeah, please. I'll get to as many as we can.
So the first one was, what's your favorite guitar solo ever?
that's a tough one. there's just so many, and somebody asked me recently, did I ever study with a guitar teacher? And I did. It wasn't until years and years later I had studied with this guy named Bernie Browsweater. He had a band in the 90s in New Jersey called BB and the Stingers. And I studied with him through the later 90s into the early 2000s. He passed away 2007. Yeah. So he was really the only teacher I could honestly say that I studied with. But in that same breath, and this is getting back to that question, all the people that I studied their guitar styles are really my teacher, and they're everyone's teacher. And that's the great thing about music and the legacy of Jimi Hendrix that he left behind for us, that, wow, studying his music, you are studying with him. So, getting back to the question, it's like, my God, there's so many guitar solos that I studied and studied and studied that they all became part of me too, that it's yeah. hard to pick out. It's hard for me to pick out one guitar solo, but I would probably say, I would probably still say Voodoo Child from Jimi Hendrix, because that or All Along the Watchtower is like another absolute perfection from him. But there's so many other guitar players that I studied and continue to study as, you know, unbelievable guitar solos. But I would put, you know, those two at the top of my list.
The second question, are there any current guitarists out there that you kind of not look up to, but you're a fan of at the moment?
Oh, absolutely. My wife and I just recently caught a recent show from Tedeschi Trucks Band, which is Derek Trucks and Susan Tedeschi. And Derek is just, my God, his guitar playing is just through the roof. You know, I'm a huge fan of Derek, and a huge fan of Warren Haynes from the Allman Brothers, too. Mm-hmm. Well, Warren is just such an absolute hero to me, being that singer, songwriter, guitar player, in the same vein of music that I love. You know, I love his singing. He's just absolutely incredible. Chris Stapleton's another one that I'm really gotten into his stuff recently, and so inspiring to hear Chris, you know, sing. You know, and so it's like some of the singers have become more inspiration to me at this point than even some of the guitar players, because you know, I'm always looking to improve my own ability.
What about, do you know of a guitarist called Mark Tremonti?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Oh, yep.
He's like, excellent. As I said, I don't really know too much about guitars, but every time I see him live or a video of him, he's been doing like a couple of little videos on YouTube, on his Instagram lately, and every one of them is just blowing me away.
I know, yeah. There's so many great guitar players out there, you know, even still, even when you think that, like, you know, the music of today is not very guitar oriented or guitar driven, but there's still a lot of fantastic guitar players out there, you know, it's, you know, very inspiring stuff for sure. Yeah. You know, I guess at this point, you know, in my career, I'm also looking towards the singing and the songwriting aspect too, not just the guitar playing, yeah. You know, but, you know, I guess that comes with, you know, with time and age and wisdom. But, you know, how do I write a better song? You know, like that's a great question for John. Obviously, he's a, you know, great songwriter.
Kind of similar to the first question, but more Bon Jovi orientated. What's your favorite Bon Jovi guitar solo?
Ah. I still loved Runaway. Yeah, I think that solo is the solo in Runaway was fantastic. And I always forget the guy's name who played it. I know it wasn't Richie that did it.
It's kind of underrated, I think, that guitar solo. You never really hear many Bon Jovi fans mention it.
I know. The studio guy who did that, I just saw a video of him recently, too. And I feel like an idiot, you know, not remembering his name, because he's an excellent guitar player. And I thought that solo was great. I loved the solo from Jeff Beck that he did on the Young Guns thing. I think that solo is just tremendous. And of course, Jeff Beck is another one of my all-time heroes, you know. But I still love Richie's, you know, solos. I still love the Want a Dead or Alive solo. Yeah. I think that's it, and it's just, you know, it fits. Richie was always so great about. He put soul into his solos, and sometimes even when they were short, he still found things that fit the song. So that's another thing about guitar players, is that we all talk about techniques, and of course speed is in there, and hammer-ons, pull-offs, and, you know, all the things that go into you know, comprising, you know, one guitar player's ability. But finding the right notes that fit the song, I think, is even more of a challenge, you know, and that's where the musicality comes into play, and you know, Richie being such a great musician and singer,
yeah,
you know, now he always, you know, found, you know, things that really fit the song, which is, you know, that's another inspiration from him for sure.
Was the guitar player Tim Pierce?
Yes, that's him.
Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah. So another question was, I mean, we kind of touched on it before, but. Just before you actually went on tour with them, how long did you have to learn the songs?
I had a month.
A month, wow. To learn 44 songs.
And which, you know, And I was, you know, me being a workaholic, I was so determined to get them all down, and it was a challenge. It really was. And, you know, I hope I didn't let John down, you know, because that was, again, my main goal was to make sure he's comfortable, make sure he's happy, and do the right thing, play the right parts, and, you know, do it the best I can, you know. So it was difficult. It was a lot of learning. And you know, me being a guitar teacher and transcribing is one of my fortes for students. So, you know, that's totally in my wheelhouse to get those 44 songs together. But in a month's time, it was a lot. It really was.
And then another one was, like, did you have to kind of manage your own band, like, you know, the workload to fit Bon Jovi in? Did you have to push anything aside or cancel any of your own shows to suit Bon Jovi?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I guess for the positive side for that, for my own band guys, I was only gone for that short period of time, you know. When I got back, we did a welcome home show at the Stone Pony in Asbury Park, which is a famous club for our area.
Yeah.
And of course around the world, legendary stage and room. We did a welcome home show there, and that was the first time I ever in my career sold out the Pony.
Wow.
Which was awesome. And it was so cool to see people I hadn't seen in 10 years and 15 years and that, you know, been fans and used to come see me play all the time. It was almost like everybody that I had ever run into or touched with music, they all showed up that night. It was the most inspiring. It was so touching. I said a bunch of words from the stage about thanking everybody for following me on this journey. And I can't believe that here we are at the Pony and it's sold out. And it was such a great night to come home to.
Yeah. Well, listen, Matt, honestly, I couldn't be happier that you've been on the podcast, I have to say.
No, thank you for having me.
One thing I will say is I was personally very disappointed when I never got to see you. I haven't got to see you in person live. I was hoping that you would stay with the band. So, you know,
Me too, man. You know, I think the last thing I had said to John about that, I said to John, you know, it's all good, man. You know, what I had first said to him during that audition, I said, man, it's great. You know, if you need me, I'll be there. And if you don't need me, I'm still going to be here, you know, as your friend regardless. So, you know, and hopefully maybe someday I'll be able to get a chance to jam with those guys again.
Did John say to you that you wouldn't be needed any longer? Did he actually say that to you, or did he kind of, once that tour finished, that's when Shanks just kind of got involved with the touring process?
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much how it went.
Shame, but it's still a fantastic experience you had by the sounds of it.
Oh, it was absolutely incredible. And, you know, I mean, all the accommodations were, you know, amazing, you know.
Yeah.
private jet and beautiful, you know, hotels and security. And it was great, you know. And I started getting into the routine of the tour, you know, at least, you know, at that point, and, you know, getting comfortable with it and getting comfortable with even just being around John. You know, I mean, John's such a nice person to be around, but, you know, it's like he's still Bon Jovi. Like, there's still, you know, no matter what, no matter how much you work with him, he's still that person. And that's still always going to be in the back of your head,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But, you know, it was, you know, the best way to say it, you know, in closing, I guess, it was the time of my life. I can't thank him enough for giving me the opportunity. I hope he enjoyed it as much as I did,
yeah.
You know, and I hope that we do more stuff in the future together.
Yeah, you and me both. Fingers crossed.
Thank you.
No, listen, thank you for coming on. I know there's going to be a lot of happy people with this one, so
good.
I'm looking forward to putting it out.
Absolutely. Tell them, you know, everybody out there, thank you for all the support. Thank you for caring about me. And thanks for, you know, anybody who came to those shows. Thanks for coming. And, you know, come check out the Matt O'Ree Band too at the same time if you got time. You know, I know it's a slightly different style of music, but we're one big happy family over here too. And, you know, so you know, come visit us for sure.
Oh, fingers crossed, definitely. Listen, with what's going on in the world, just make sure you stay safe. Hopefully,
yeah, everything's you guys okay. as well. Yep.
And hopefully your shows can carry on soon.
Yes, I hope so too. And you know, one way or the other, we'll be back out there touring, and come see us. And I know I'm going to be in Denmark in the fall. I'm going to be playing with a good friend of mine. He was Joe Cocker's keyboard player for a while. So I'm going to announce those dates when we get closer, and hopefully all that stuff will still happen. So anybody overseas, I will be in Denmark, you know, in November of 2020.
Oh, brilliant. Fingers crossed it goes ahead then at the moment.
I hope so too.
Matt, thank you very, very much.
Oh, thank you for having me, brother. And I'm just, you know, I'm happy to know you, and let's keep in touch and be happy to come back on at any point.
Love it. Thanks so much for that, Matt. All the best.
No problem.
Thank you.
You too, man. Bye. Thank you, brother.
It's all right.
Bye.
Bye.